In this episode, discover what marketers should learn from Samsung's latest video campaigns.
Discover how video can help you achieve your sales and marketing goals. It all starts right here in Todd Hartley's Video Marketing Mastery. Brought to you by Wirebuzz.
Hey now. In a moment, I'm going to be joined by Wirebuzz's Director of Strategy, Marcus Krieg. We're going to have a really nice conversation about Samsung's two most recent video campaigns and what marketers like you, me, and Marcus can learn and really apply to our own businesses. Stay tuned for that. It's going to be a great conversation. And before I get to the news, Saturday was a great day in my life. I went down to Tucson, Arizona, on the campus of my alma mater, the great University of Arizona. You know, I'm an alumni advisory board member for the most remarkable student program in the country. Now, you probably don't know this about me. In fact, I hope you don't know this because it means that I've done a really good job laying out a strong foundation for myself. But I was a learning disabled student, and in 1990, the nation's leading academic support program for students who learn differently, the SALT Center, admitted me and turned my life around. If I don't go into detail about what I had or the struggles, it's not minimizing it. We're just doing a podcast today, and if any of you are interested, you could always reach out to me. I've talked about it in length in past episodes. But today, that center, the SALT Center, they have over 550 U of A students. And on Saturday in Tucson, I taught them how to successfully prepare for job interviews. You know, what to look for, the body language, how to speak with confidence, the way to prepare before they go in, all of those important things that any college student could benefit from, especially someone with some learning differences that can really, with the right skills and the right preparation, can do a great thing to help them propel forward. Now, if you want to know more, I'm going to post a video about my SALT experiences on the show notes page for this episode, and along with a photo of me at ESPN's College Game Day before the UCLA-Arizona basketball game in McHale Center, and it was awesome. Just so much fun. Anyway, look for that on the show notes page. And now, here's the news that matters to video marketing masters. The Wall Street Journal reported yesterday that people view over 1 billion, with a big B, hours of video a day on YouTube. Now, the Wall Street Journal reported this, but this is really what YouTube's claim is, all right? I only say that because we're in an era of fake or manufactured or, kind of close news. And maybe it isn't even an era. Maybe this has been going on, like I suspect has been going on forever, but now it's just a topic that's being surfaced. So YouTube claims it's got over 1 billion hours of video a day that's being watched, compared to 106 million hours of daily streamed on Netflix, or 100 million streamed hours of video on Facebook, which would make YouTube, if YouTube's being honest, 10 times bigger than Netflix or Facebook's video viewing audience. It's an interesting stat. You know, when people think of video marketing, really their first knee-jerk reaction is to think that videos are for, you know, for YouTube. And sure, you know, when in most cases our clients, they're using videos on their website, they're using it in their email outreach or their sales enablement. And I always find it really interesting because when I'm sitting down with people and let's say I meet somebody at dinner or something and they ask me what I do, that really their first thing is, you mean like marketing on YouTube? And very little, it feels like, of what our clients are doing is catering to an audience on YouTube. We have a much more strategic approach for most clients. Sure, YouTube's good for certain situations, and you know that we've talked about this in past podcast episodes. If, you know, for many businesses, YouTube isn't really a good approach, and there are significantly better ways to generate ROI. Wirebuzz's Director of Strategy, Marcus Krieg, pulled together a fabulous article titled, How to Know If YouTube is Right for Your Business. I highly recommend that you look at it. I'll make sure it's on the show notes page for this episode, which is episode 66. That URL coming up in a moment. An easy way to remember 66 is, if you're a follower of sports, Well, you'll remember that the Green Bay Packers retired jersey number 66 for linebacker Ray Nitzke. The Pittsburgh Penguins retired 66 for, wait for it, if you guess it, say it out loud, that's right, Mario Lemieux. And if you're a follower of Jesus, the total number of chapters in the Bible, Book of Isaiah, is 66. To get access to the show notes and everything that we talk about in this episode, just go to wirebuzz.com/66. Benedict Townsend from We the Unicorns wrote a great article about the huge mistake Facebook is about to make. You know, I tipped you off about this developing Facebook problem in last week's episode, but you know what? Why don't we take a moment and let Benedict explain it? I like how he explained it. He writes, quote, "By a show of hands, what is everyone's least favorite feature on YouTube?" That's right. It's the intrusive advertising. Of course it is. Well, the good news is that YouTube recently announced that it's finally phasing out the unskippable 30-second ads that we all absolutely hate. Now, the bad news is that Facebook has heard and apparently ignored every single lesson YouTube has learned in its time as a video service, because they recently announced that they're soon going to be adding ads when it comes to videos. Interesting, when preparing for this podcast, I also noticed on Fox News's website that their video player actually says in the bottom right corner, quote, "never autoplays videos." And so, look, you know why Fox doesn't autoplay videos, right? But apparently Facebook's Mark Zuckerberg doesn't. The reason autoplay sucks is because autoplaying videos frustrates visitors who aren't expecting audio to all of a sudden jump out of their speakers in the middle of the day while they're pretending to be at work. And like they're on, let's say they're on ESPN, and before you know it, out of their computer goes, da-na-na, da-na-na. Nobody wants to hear that because it confuses the whole room that they're sitting in. And so Zuck is going to have a very hard lesson that he shouldn't need to know how to learn. By the way, if you want to see that screenshot of the Fox News video player and what it says in the bottom right corner, it's on the show notes page. All right, so let's get this straight. Fox News, Twitter, and YouTube now know more about how audiences respond to autoplay videos than Facebook. And this isn't going to end well for the big Zuck. If I were advising your company, Facebook, I'd recommend that Facebook test how really small audience samples react to autoplay videos. It's a whole lot better to run a small micro test than to roll this toxic autoplay solution out to 1.8 billion members. By the way, this actually reminds me of something funny. You know, I've got a digital marketing guru friend that I call when I'm stumped and I'm stumped about marketing optimization or some problem like that. And each time I get him on the phone and I lay out my situation, should I do this or would it be better if I do it that way? You know, that kind of a marketing problem. For like the last 10 years, he always gives me the same exact answer when I'm done. He patiently listens, but then gives me the same answer. And the guy is so damn polite listening to my lengthy explanation. His answer is always, "Why don't you test it?" And it kind of pisses me off because I should already know that's going to be his answer. But for most digital marketing problems, that's the answer. Test, test, test. And then Big Zuck, if you did a little micro test, you'd find out long before you pissed everybody off that this is a bad idea. Hey, did you see the Academy Awards on Sunday? You know, last night was the day after the Academy Awards, and my wife and I watched the film Moonlight, which won the Best Picture, Best Supporting Actor and Actress, and the Academy Award for the Best Adaptive Screenplay for writing a, and basically, if you want to know what that is, the adaptive screenplay, it's for writing the screenplay that's been adapted from another source, like a novel or a play or a short story or a TV show or something like that. Sometimes even another film it could be. How this movie, Moonlight, was considered a great screenplay, I will never know. The actors actually had very few lines throughout the entire movie. Lots of times wasted just kind of looking at each other and making facial expressions. You know, about 15 minutes into the movie, my wife looked at me and said, and there was plenty of time to talk between dialogues, so that's not a problem. She looked at me and she goes, "Is this going to be one of those movies where it's cool to say nothing?" And it was. So how it got to be an adaptive screenplay Academy Award winner is absolutely beyond me. Great to see that Remy from House of Cards, who's a badass, got an Academy Award, but he got an Academy Award for Best Supporting Actor. Literally, dude was in 10 minutes of it, right? Great paycheck, beat it, I'm done, let me get my hardware, I'm out. Kind of scenario like that. Benzinga reports Facebook is in talks with Major League Baseball to stream one game per week during the upcoming season. Didn't anybody tell Facebook that baseball sucks watching it? That you actually have to play the game for it to be interesting? Analysts at Loop Capital expect the company to be more aggressive in acquiring sports and other content. You know, Facebook previously lost out to Twitter to live streaming Thursday night football games last season. Benzinga reports, quote, "The company is investing aggressively in its video strategy in 2017, and it should help offset overall slowing growth. And we expect the company to be able to beat and rise through 2017, said Blake Harper of Loop Capital. Facebook has also reached an agreement to stream 46 matches of Mexican Soccer League, and that'll happen this year. Now, why are Facebook and Twitter aggressively signing video deals with sports leagues? Well, the answer is kind of obvious, right? They need to keep visitors on their site longer. They know that their visitors are going to be interested in sports. It's a really smart move, and because they have access to massive audience analytics, really user behavior databases, they know that people watch video. They know that when people watch video, they spend two times longer on a web page compared to sites that don't use video. And this is exactly why in Twitter's annual 10K report released just yesterday, the company said it's going to focus more on video in 2017. The move comes as Twitter continues to struggle to make money, losing more than $400 million in the last year. Now, going forward, Twitter plans to grow its video presence in an effort to reach new users and potential buyers. Think about buyers. It seems like the founders of Twitter are all preparing their golden parachutes and looking to get out. And a lot of these deals, look, they lost $400 million, but a lot of their big news over the last couple of years have been streaming award ceremonies and inaugurations and presidential debates, all these things that may look good when it happens and may get them in news, but may not translate to revenue, right? Going forward, Twitter plans to grow its video presence in an effort to reach new users and potential buyers. The company said in its report, quote, "We intend to invest in our core use case and new product areas, such as live streaming video, among other things, that further strengthen Twitter's unique presence as the best and fastest place to talk about anything that's happening in the world." Now, I think in many cases, Twitter is that place. If something's happening, if something's breaking, you know, I know that it was fun the night that Osama bin Laden was killed to watch the conversation take place on Twitter. A really great, or even watching presidential debates and watching the funny things. Twitter's rolling out a top video for you section. You should know about this. It's going to happen any day now. That shows videos that it believes that the user, which is probably somebody like you or even someone like me, may enjoy. And the videos are going to play automatically without sound, thank you, as you hover over them. You know, a Twitter spokesman confirmed this, and there's an article that I'll put on the show notes page. You can get more information. Now, here's the most important business takeaway that you should be getting out of most of these stories that I've been setting up for you. The first thing I want you to do, what I want you to do is I want you to think about how long it takes for you to convince a new prospect that you should be doing business with them, all right? If you've got a complex business cycle, look, it may take a day. It may take a day and a half. If you have a less than complex business or your product is pretty easy to understand, it may take 10 minutes or an hour, right? So what I want you to do is I want you to write that amount of time on a piece of paper. Now, the second action item that I've got for you is I want you to go and check out your business's website analytics. You know, most of us are running on Google Analytics, and I want you to write down how long your average visitor stays on your site. how long are people staying on your website? It's so important that you understand that. Write that number down on the same piece of paper. All right, draw a line under it and divide how long your average visitor stays on your site from the total number of minutes it takes for you to convince a new prospect that they need to become a customer. That's how many interactions it's going to take at minimum to close the deal. So by simply increasing attention span, you can dramatically shorten your sales cycle and decrease marketing costs because traffic is expensive, yo. I'd love to hear what your number is, so tweet it to me at @TheToddHartley. I'll mention you in next show's episode, all right? If video doubles the amount of time that people spend on your site, you need to strategically think about how you can get people on your site longer, expand their knowledge, their ability to learn information on their own without a salesperson, because people do not like interacting with salespeople until they've narrowed down their options and are ready to make a buying decision, or they're in a consideration stage to make a buying. You need to be thinking about all the information that your salesperson would be giving a prospect to get that sale, that conversion. And then you need to be creating the assets in video that live on your site that pulls that prospect through the buyer's journey. And by doing that, you're going to double their attention span and move them closer and faster to a conversion. Facebook and Twitter know that people spend twice as long on sites with video. So by adding video, they're going to increase revenue by demanding ad rates, higher ad rates. But what about your business, right? If you want to know more about how to guarantee your videos get ROI, Wirebuzz just launched a free video mini course that teaches our three-step system that we use here in-house to generate video ROI for sales and marketing teams. And you can access it for free from our website. Just go to wirebuzz.com/ROI. In news that's hard to read, USA Today reported those trendy Snap Spectacle video glasses are now available to the general public. The $129 shades, which shoots 10-second video clips and wirelessly transfers to Snapchat's photo and video sharing app, could be yours. It's now been released, which is exciting news for some, but not for me at all. And this reminds me way back in the day in 2011, like a year before Google Glass were typically, you know, were publicly on the scene. Google sent me two pairs to show audiences during my marketing speeches, and my wife and I were going to have happy hour with Shark Tank's Damon John. You know which one he is. He's the fashion one. And I brought the Google glasses to show Damon because nobody had seen him yet. And while my wife and I were going up a glass elevator with this amazing outside view up to the top floor, the Aerosmith song Love in an Elevator came on, and I started filming as we were climbing, you know, more stairs in the elevator with the Google Glass, and just then, without me knowing, my wife started dancing in the elevator and made a very sexual, suggestive comment. And I said, "No, no, honey, I'm actually filming right now." And she replied back, "What are you going to do? Upload to Google?" And just then, the Google Glass replied back to her and it said, "Your upload is complete." And by the time the elevator opened at the happy hour, my wife's sexy dance and comments were now live on Google+. I'll post a photo, not of her in the elevator, but with us with Damon John. Oh, and I'm also going to post a photo on the show notes page of the day that Wirebuzz spent filming with baseball Hall of Famer Johnny Bench, because he's wearing my Google Glass as we ended the day with a couple of margaritas. You're going to want to see that. It'll be on the show notes page. Really cool photo. Greatest catcher of all time. So I've had my time with wearable glass. I'm totally not impressed. We only plugged them in if people were coming into the office and they wanted to see it, and I couldn't be more disinterested in Snapchat's spectacles. Now, the problem is sticking a camera in people's face. People don't respond well to that. People are not comfortable talking with you if they think you might be filming them. It creeps people out, and that's never the way that you want to develop relationships. Silicon Beat is reporting it looks like venture capitalists aren't the only ones in Silicon Valley who will rake in cash when Snap goes public this week. According to a report by The Information, which by definition can't be fake news, an endowment fund from a Mountain View-based Catholic high school stands to make tens of millions of dollars if not more. An investment fund associated with St. Francis High School is believed to be one of the earliest investors in the Venice-based Snap, the parent company of Snapchat, you know, which is the disappearing messaging app. It's a pretty ingenious if a school can rake in some money. Hey, last week I had dinner with Vidyard, and when they were literally 1 mile from my house, and most of our conversations at dinner revolved around video being used by sales teams to convince and convert their prospects at faster rates. You know, this is a topic we absolutely love on this podcast. And earlier in this episode, I told you that I don't think video marketing revolves around YouTube. It does. It's like the gateway drug, right? At the very beginning, video marketing revolves around YouTube. And of course, most people, when they get started with video marketing, start there. But that's not where I see the best results from our clients, where they earn the highest ROI. And I know Vidyard feels the same way. And that's why if you go right now and you look at the Vidyard blog, there are 4 articles teaching you how to use video to get revenue results for your sales teams. Articles like how to get your sales team using and loving video, or how marketing can enable sales to use video. How about this one? How video helps sales and marketing alignment, and mystery solved, what goes into award-winning content that sales teams absolutely love. Sounds like they're building some type of a hub and spoke marketing strategy with content to drive people to understand and for the search engines to also look and see all this gravity that's happening at Vidyard around sales enablement and video content. But literally, that's where this road is headed. And if you want to know more about how you do this and you want to read some of these articles, I'll make sure you can get access to each of those Vidyard articles on our show notes page, wirebuzz.com/66, just like Route 66, which goes right through my state of Arizona. All right, joining us right now is Wirebuzz's Director of Strategy, Marcus Krieg. Marcus, how you doing, dude?
What's up?
What is up? And we're gonna be discussing, as promised, Samsung's latest video campaign and what marketers can learn from their very smart strategy. So Marcus, bring us up to speed. Tell us what Samsung has been up to.
Well, I actually think Samsung's had 2 really smart campaigns that they aired just this last weekend over the Oscars. And it presents a really interesting case study for us because it's 2 types of campaigns with 2 types of videos of 2 different video lengths doing 2 completely different things.
Now, if you could, we'll get into this in just a second, but set up the Samsung problem. You know, I know it, and it's really clear to me because, you know, I'm on too many airplanes, and every time I get on an airplane, they talk about Samsung, and then everybody giggles. But for those who don't know, what's the Samsung problem?
Yeah, Samsung had a really severe phone battery issue. They were exploding, they were smoking, people were getting burns, and obviously that led to a huge product recall. They recalled over 2.5 million devices, and the total damage to Samsung's bottom line was over $22 billion.
With a B.
With a B.
Boom.
And so what they're trying to do with the first campaign we're going to talk about is they're really focusing on this quality, you know, being their number one priority, and they're showing this you know, battery safety campaign and what they're doing about it. Really, what they're doing is they're directly addressing the elephant in the room,
which is about the quality of the device and the testing that they put into it to make sure it's safe, right?
Right. Yeah. I mean, they lost a lot of trust with the market. You know, they were one of the market leaders. The Samsung Galaxy phones, the Note, and the Galaxy S6 or the Galaxy S series phones. These are 2 of the more popular devices on the market. They're considered the top competitors to the iPhone. And so when you have one of these devices that's, you know, it seems like they're in everyone's hands and you have to recall it, there's a serious breach
that's
of trust.
Problem.
Yeah.
Right?
So what they're looking at now is sort of creating a couple of campaigns. These were, you know, short 30-second videos. And what they're showing is it's almost like a will it blend model, right?
Oh, okay.
Where they're showing you how tough the device is and the type of testing and the rigor through which they put each of these devices.
So will it blend? That's that, like, you put a device inside of a Ninja or a Nutribullet, and you watch to see if it'll chop if the blender's strong enough, right?
Well, in this case, that was BlendTec. So BlendTec, it was the BlendTec brand of blender, and they were testing different devices. So like they would put in a rock, and they would see if the blender could handle the rock, and then they would put in an iPhone. And this was when the iPhone blend experiment was actually when BlendTec sort of took the market by storm.
Right?
Yeah. And so the idea is that, you know, they're battle testing their product in these videos. They're showing their 8-point battery safety check. And you can definitely, we'll link up these videos in the show notes. You'll get a chance to see them. But the first campaign is innovation is our legacy, quality is our priority. And what they did with these two videos was, you know, they obviously talked about that 8-point battery safety check. And on screen, they're showing all sorts of those Will It Blend style B-roll. So they're showing things like drilling through the device, putting a hole in it. They're heating it up. They're freezing it. They're spraying water on the device. And during all of these tests, they're also actually using the device. Like they're like swiping at it and seeing if it'll still work. And the point is they're not just telling you, hey, we take quality seriously. Hey, we understand we screwed up. They're proving it through demonstration.
And they're sharing it through video, which people have access to. They can see it on social. They're probably dropping a lot of a very large ad campaign behind it. We both saw it during the Academy Awards. And I even saw it last night when I was going through TV. Very, very smart.
Yep. And these particular videos that I'm thinking about are, they were good quality, they were very well produced, but they were done at scale. So they created several videos at the same time. There's B-roll that's being used in one 30-second clip that's not used in the other one, but then there is some that's crossing over. Stylistically, they're pretty much the same. And I obviously like that approach because A, they're testing, right? They have two different ad creatives that they can run against each other. But B, they understand that this particular type of content that they're putting out there, this, sort of problem content, as Marcus Sheridan would put it, is, you know, you address the problem with your products. What are your competitors saying about you? What is the market saying about you? And instead of, as Marcus would put it, burying your head in the sand, you address it. You attack the problem. You own that conversation. And that's what they're doing with these videos. So it was just a very smart strategy. But what's interesting about having multiple of them, aside from testing, is the fact that this is not the kind of video someone's going to look up, right? They're not going to go look at, are Samsung devices safe, and then find this commercial ad. That's just, that's not how it's going to play out. They created multiple ads so that they would have multiple opportunities to capture someone's attention, because they know that they need to get this message out into the world, and they wanted to create as many opportunities to do that as possible.
Super efficient, very catchy, the high repetition, beating in a very consistent message. What should marketers take away from a strategy like this? You know, the people that are listening that are actually working on campaigns that might have, you know, dirty laundry with product, something they might be solving, you know, what kind of advice can you give marketers on this?
Yeah. This is one of those things that sort of changed as the internet took over, right? As the buying process migrated from talking to a salesperson to going to the internet to research the products independently. And that's that the balance of power of information has completely shifted.
It's a huge shift.
Right? So, you know, 20 years ago, the average business had a few competitors, right? And so, but people had to call you. So you would hope that if there was something wrong with your business that your competitors would identify, that your prospects just wouldn't call that company.
Right.
You could hide it because you had all the information. These days, you can't rely on that level of consumer ignorance anymore. Your consumers know your dirty laundry. Your competitors know your dirty laundry. Everyone's going to talk about it except for seemingly most businesses. They don't talk about their own problems. This is one of those things that you absolutely have to address, because if you don't, someone else will. And they get to control that conversation.
Right. It's the crazy grandma in the basement that nobody wants to talk about inside the house, but you know you need to.
You definitely need to address the elephant in the room these days. And the other thing that I thought was really interesting here is they attacked an objection, right? They this is obviously a reason why people are deciding not to get a Samsung Galaxy device. So instead of, you know, burying their head in the sand or hoping that they're going to rebound after 3 or 4 years, or, you know, hyping something else up, right, you know, changing the name of the product, they could have just changed the name
of
the product.
They got right back into the game.
Yeah. They went out there and they said, hey, look, we hear you. We screwed up. We own that. And not only do we own that, we're doing something about it. And I'm not just telling you that, I'm proving it to you. This is us in the lab testing these phones. This is the type of rigor we're putting them through now because we hear that you want quality.
Which people really like. I mean, people appreciate it. It's like a, it's like using old world business relationship tools in a new medium to make sure that your name is good again.
Right. And you know, in this new age, everyone wants to talk about the things that they think make them special as a business.
Right.
But what ends up happening is they all talk about the same things. Quality, customer service, concierge, we're partners with you. You know, they all have the same message, but it's the brands that prove it that rise to the top.
All right, so that's one of their two styles of videos. So they had two different types, but there's another style of video. You know, let's move on to the Casey Neistat campaign. What happened in the video, and, you know, why is it interesting for marketers?
Yeah, okay, so I loved this video. I know you love this video.
Too, yeah.
Our whole office loved this video. Obviously, we're video nerds, and Casey Neistat's, you know, one of the ultimate, or dare I say, penultimate video nerds.
Oh, there you go again.
There I go again. So what was really interesting about this particular video, so Casey Neistat is one of the biggest names in YouTube. He's had a YouTube vlog for, God, years now.
Right.
And he made this ad where he walks out to camera and he says, allow me to introduce the rest of us. We're the makers, the directors, the creators of this generation. We don't have big award shows or huge budgets or fancy cameras, but we do have our phones and duct tape and parking lots and guts. And we have ideas we need to share. We know it's not the size of the production that matters. It's what you make. We don't create because we have to. We create because we love to. And we've captured billions of moments from different angles, from different reasons, for millions of viewers. But with one thing in common. When we're told we can't, we all have the same answer. Watch me. Okay.
You loved the copy, right?
Loved the copy.
Marcus is a copy nerd, so I know that you got particularly excited when you were looking at, when you were listening to the copy, how it played out. You even loved reading it right there.
Oh my gosh. There's so many things about this that are just super brilliant.
So tell me why it's effective. Why do you think that that's really effective copy?
Gosh, well, for the first and foremost, he's not marketing the product. He's talking about an ideal. He's talking about building community. This is almost a manifesto. And he's delivering it on behalf of Samsung and talking, you use a Samsung device to capture videos, but that's not really what he's talking about. He's really just talking to people who want to be creators, and then they're slapping the Samsung brand on it at the end. So it has the makings of a viral video because it serves the needs of the viewer, not necessarily the needs of the brand.
It's a rallying cry for their target customer to get excited about, right? I mean,
yep.
That's who they're talking to. When you go back and you hear people give great speeches, the ones that can galvanize the audience, they are the ones that write and present their argument in a very similar manner.
Right. And I mean, we all remember the Apple commercial, right?
Sure.
You know, from
1984.
Yeah, 1984. Yeah. And it's the same kind of model that ad sort of sought to create this like identity around the brand. And so there are multiple things that were wonderful about this, but just from a copy perspective, they took the right angle for this video to have legs after the commercial.
Right.
Right. So they did something that was going to be meaningful, that people were going to rewatch, that people were going to share. The second thing that I think is really interesting about the copy here, super short, punchy sentences.
Right. Which is easier to digest.
Much easier for people to consume, right? One of the biggest criticisms I have of client revisions is that they make really long, complex sentences, which works when you can read it yourself because you can always reread it.
Right.
But when you have to hear it and you don't get to use your eyes, remember, we're visual creatures. So if we are reading something in text, we're reinforcing the complexity using visual processing. But when we're listening to it and something else is happening, it needs to be simple and easy for someone to hear and understand.
Context starts unraveling.
Absolutely. So that was the other thing, super short sentences. And then this is the one that seems to just vex people to no end.
True.
Almost every sentence starts with and or but. Almost every single one. And the reason why people do that when we're making a video script is that it sounds like a conversation. It sounds the way someone talks. When you read something and the sentences don't flow together, it doesn't bother you. It doesn't trip out your brain. But when you're hearing someone talk and the sentences don't flow from one to the next to the next to the next in this perfect sequence, it doesn't sound conversational, right? If that doesn't exist, it's a speed bump. It's a pattern interrupt. It's a disconnect, and it makes people stop and think. Well, what did they just say? And what did they? And now they're saying this. And now you've got confusion. Again, with text, you have a lot of liberty with your language, but with video, you have to be tight. You have to be short and succinct. That doesn't mean your video has to be short. It means your sentences need to be tight, and then you need to tie them together. No speed bumps. Everything flows. It's all about momentum.
It's a great video. Check it out. We're going to put it on the show notes page, wirebuzz.com/66. Any other takeaways, Marcus, on the Samsung video campaign that's really buying their grace back into their customers' communities, right?
Yeah. So another thing that I loved about this is how perfectly targeted it was. Okay. Everything about this strategy lined up. So first of all, they knew that this video was going to have the biggest legs on YouTube. Because these are the people they're targeting.
Right.
They're targeting the YouTube creators. And so with that in mind, what did they do? They went out and they got one of the biggest YouTube creators in the world.
Peer-to-peer conversation.
Yep. So now they tapped into an influencer who also will resonate with the target customer that the target customer looks up to and respects.
Smart.
Right? It's not just Kobe Bryant. It's someone who's relevant to the target customer in this context.
I'm a Laker fan. I'm not buying anything Kobe's.
And then the last thing is they seeded this campaign. Seeding, again, is if you're going to try to make something go viral, you first need to get enough eyeballs on it for that viral effect to happen. So they seeded this particular ad during the Oscars when people who are interested in video and video creation are tuned in and paying attention.
Absolutely.
Everything about this strategy was just so. Another thing that I loved about it, they knew that they had a lot to say, right? This is a manifesto. There's something that needs to be said. They can't just split it up into two pieces.
Right.
So they didn't try to conform to the industry standard of creating a 30-second commercial spot. They made a one-minute video because that's how long it took them to deliver their message and have it be powerful.
Right.
Right? That meant it cost twice as much for them to get the airtime, but they knew that it was justifiable because it was going to have that much more of an impact. That's the type of calculation people need to make when they're determining how long a video should be.
Uh-huh.
If I go longer, yes, my costs go up in many cases, but will it be worth it in terms of the impact that video is going to have on my target customer?
And as we've explained in past episodes, often when videos are longer, you know, they may be more expensive, but they do have higher conversion rates.
Yep. Yep, that's every single video ad we've ever run. The longer version has always outperformed in terms of conversion rate and cost per lead.
Right, that's what you discover when you test.
Yep.
All right, Marcus, now let's talk about results. What were the results of these three videos?
Sure. So the first two, which were the, you know, qualities are priority videos, those got 75 and 125,000 views since Sunday, right, when the Oscars aired. And I'm sure some of that was advertising. I'm sure a lot of it was organic. Obviously, there's been some conversation. It's been in the news. People have been talking about this a little bit.
But just for clarity, this is only 48 hours later.
Right. Right. And when I looked at these, they were closer to 40,000 each. So one of them separated from the other in terms of performance, and they both have tripled since Sunday night when I looked at them. Almost immediately, they all got between 30 and 40,000 views right away.
Now, in the interest of full disclosure, we don't know what an ad spend could be that they might have put on these videos, but if it's all organic, it does tell you something very interesting.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing that's interesting, the ads, they will count a 30-second view from an ad as a view. Samsung, in my experience, when I've seen them doing YouTube ads, usually they're running an ad that's not skippable, which is very common for the bigger brands.
I see. Okay.
You tend to do those. But I'm not 100% sure on this one. I didn't see any telltale signs of advertising on them. I do suspect that they will, because there's no reason not to. These are good creative.
Right.
But the what's interesting, just as a sort of point of comparison between these two types of campaigns, right? One was clearly designed to handle a specific sales process point of resistance, an objection, which is quality. They're going to have to push that message for years now,
right?
Because of the crisis they had. So they're not. It's never going to go viral. It's a marketing message. People know it's a sales message.
At the very least, it's going to take just as long to unwind as it took to build that message that they weren't safe.
Oh yeah, yeah.
At the very least.
At the very least.
Yep.
Probably much much longer.
And
but
think about all the free negative ads that their competitor got every time somebody went to board an airplane and you were told that device was not allowed to be on there.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, that's a reinforcing.
Yep.
You have to pay now advertising to roll that back out.
Oh yeah. Heads. Oh yeah. Now you contrast that, those results, which admittedly were pretty good.
Right.
You know, the average video gets less than 1,000 views on YouTube, and here we are 125,000 after a couple days. But when we look at the Casey Neistat video, 1.5 million views within hours. Within hours. It's now in the top, I think it's 36th trending video on YouTube right
but
now.
Isn't that a case for why you should be using influencers, especially when you're doing peer-to-peer communication?
Absolutely. Influencers are the silver bullet. Look, traffic's expensive. Creating a lot of videos can be expensive. So what you do is you do it the right way. You make sure that the strategy aligns with your objective, right? This Casey Neistat video, it doesn't talk about Samsung's device. Not even a little bit. It just slaps the banner on at the end. All they're talking about is what you can do with a phone from a film perspective, from a video creator perspective. And then it has that manifesto. So, right, we're always talking about the more marketing message you put into a video, the less viral it becomes. They wanted this to be a viral video. So they went to an influencer who had pull on the platform in which that video was designed for. They made sure that the message was not salesy or marketing related, that it was something that people would appreciate, would derive value and pleasure from. And then they seeded it in the most economical format they possibly could, which in this case was just putting it in front of 100 million people during the Oscars.
Right.
And so everything about that video is was engineered for viral sharing.
Really smart takeaways. One thing that I'm recognizing is not everybody's product needs an influencer that's a rock star on YouTube,
mm-hmm.
right? Often your product or service has an influencer in your industry that has a very niche following. They may be a key opinion leader, a KOL in a medical specialty or even a subspecialty. Mm-hmm. Or it could be somebody that is well known in any other field that you might be selling a product to. And as soon as you think about who that influencer is and the gravitas that they have in that industry, it's great to partner up with them.
Oh yeah, I agree completely. And actually, it's really important for everyone who's listening to understand that you don't have to go to the biggest name in the industry.
Right.
And there might not ever, in your industry, there might not be a huge Casey Neistat type character. It's really unlikely. Most industries won't have a Casey Neistat. But there are going to be F-list, D-list influencers, people who have a relevant audience, even if it's just 1,000 rabid fans. you're not paying that person as much to produce a video for you as you'd be paying Casey Neistat.
Yeah.
Right? So leverage the influencers. We have a couple clients right now. I know Cool Sculpting is working with influencers and YouTubers and vloggers. Yep. And I've seen the results of those campaigns. Some of them have over 1.5 million video views. And it's because they are talking to the people who control the audience, right? They're people who already have audience. It's the new media.
And with our medical clients, you know, maybe they're a device manufacturer and the person that we're interviewing is going to be a key influencer.
Right. Someone right? that when a doctor in that subspecialty, you know, there might be 2,000 people in that entire target audience. And if there's only a few thousand people in your addressable market, then who's the biggest player in that? Who's the biggest fish in that pond?
Yep.
Get that person on the video because everyone else already looks up to them.
You're too young for this, but there was a great ad when I was a kid, and it reminds me of key influencers. And that ad was, when E.F. Hutton talks, people listen. And that's what happens when your key opinion leader is talking about your product or service. Your target customer listens. It catches their ear. And then they start building an understanding or an appreciation for your product or your service because that person, like E.F. Hutton, is talking.
Yeah. And from
you're too young for that, right?
Yeah, I don't know who E.F. Hutton is. But
I think he's dead.
Yeah. I wouldn't even know. no frame Great of reference ad. Whatsoever. But the other thing to keep in mind is the value of a celebrity spokesperson in general, I think, is very poorly understood. And so, you know, while we're on the topic, we may as well just address that real fast, which is it helps you capture someone's attention if that person is relevant to your customer, right? It does not ensure they will watch all of your video. The influencer is not the hack. It does not necessarily make the message that sells. The influencer is simply a way of getting attention, and if the influencer is relevant, lending credibility to your product. It's a value add. It's not a silver bullet. Your copy, your message still needs to be right. Your targeting still needs to be right. And what we're seeing here with the Samsung video ad is they did all of those things right. And that's why they're now at 4.3 million video views.
So cool. I'm glad you brought this topic up. I'm glad we had an opportunity to talk about it on the podcast. You know, recognizing that in this episode, we talked a lot about ROI. And I mentioned earlier that Wirebuzz just launched our new 5-day video course on how to generate video marketing ROI in just 3 simple steps. And you can get that video course for free at wirebuzz.com/ROI. All right. So in this episode, we covered a lot of territory, specifically about, you know, how Samsung, when they got their ass handed to them, how they dug their way out and are doing so right now, leveraging the power of video. We talked about Facebook and Twitter and Snapchat and YouTube and really where video marketing is going. For more information, you can always go to the show notes page, wirebuzz.com/66. It'll jump you right to that page where you can get all the information and even see some of the photos that I brought up during this podcast episode. If this episode was valuable to you, please make sure you subscribe. Go to Stitcher, Google Play, or iTunes and hit the subscribe button. And also, while you're there, if you could do me a solid, leave me a really honest rating and review. And if there's anybody that you root for that could benefit from the Video Marketing Mastery Podcast, please share it. Make sure they know about it. Because at the end of the day, all we're doing is telling you where marketing is going and how to use the most powerful tool on the internet, which is video, to amplify sales and marketing. And when you do that inside of your office or when you go and consult, you become a video marketing master.